is the Most Blessed Podcast, recorded live at Most Blessed Sacrament in Arlington, Texas.
Hello, Father. Okay, first of all, is it Father Simeon, Brother Simeon, Monk Simeon?
I prefer uncle, you know? I think it's a good mixing
uncle
of the
Simeon?
Two.
All right.
So technically, brother and father are both true because all monks were brothers. But I'm also ordained a priest, so if somebody calls me brother, I certainly don't get offended because I love that monastic life. But father would be the normal when both apply.
Okay. So, Father Simeon Spitz, thank you for joining me today on the Most Blessed Podcast. It has been nice to have you here this week. You have engaged us in Egypt like we've never been engaged. So, you're bringing it alive for us, and I appreciate that. So you are a priest slash monk, and you were ordained a priest, and now you're a monk. Is that
other way around?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I was a monk first, and then I got ordained.
Oh, okay.
When my abbot told me to go to seminary, that was my discernment process.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was going to ask how you. Well, you just answered it, so thank you.
Oh, how the discernment to the priesthood or
yes.
to the monk side?
Okay. Let's start with how did you decide, or how did you know that the priesthood was for you?
Okay.
Or the monk life was for you?
Yeah, with the priesthood side, it wasn't my decision. It was the abbot's.
Okay.
I was already a monk, already in my first vows, not final vows. And I was walking down the hallway. The abbot grabbed me and said, Father Simeon, can I schedule a time? Can we get together and talk? And then he said, actually, this won't take very long. You'll be applying to the seminary in the fall. End of discernment.
Nice.
In the monastery, abbot's got the juice. And if somebody wants to be ordained a priest, they can tell the abbot, hey, I think I feel called to that. But ultimately, in the monastery, it's the abbot's decision, not the individual's.
So not all monks are priests.
Oh, no. Oh,
okay.
No.
Okay. So,
in fact, our default setting is not.
Oh. And so being a priest allows you to fill in that blank. Allows you to preach or?
Allows me to be a worse monk, first off. It's attention. It really is attention. Because the monastic life is about tuning out the world, focusing on freedom from our vices, enhancing the virtues, living in the monastery, life apart.
Okay.
Whereas ordained ministry is all about service and spreading the word. And so that creates a tension. And so most of the time I feel like a rubber band stretched between two hands, you know, just waiting for it to pop and sling. But that's also part of what makes monk priests have a little bit different perspective when we preach or teach. That contemplative side is in action there. So as a priest, I'm allowed to celebrate the sacraments.
Mm-hmm.
But my primary duty—
Monks cannot do that.
As a priest. Correct. Yeah. Monks,
okay.
Monks are boy nuns. That's what we are. That's the best way to describe. We are men and women religious. Uguale, you know, we are consecrated to God in lives of service. And for the contemplative orders, yeah. A brother and a sister, they're doing the same thing. They're just on, you know, different encampments.
This is
so
enlightening.
There's that.
Okay.
And then being a priest for us is kind of like the, I don't want to boil it down to just this, but it's kind of like a house job assignment. Now, it is still that, you know, order of Melchizedek and standing in the person of Christ and all that we do the priesthood degree. It's a wonderful thing. But in the monastery, that is first and foremost lived out unto the fellow brothers. So my first job is not to be in a parish to preach, teach, and sanctify like so many wonderful pastors do.
Right.
It's to be in the monastery and to hear the confessions of my brothers, to offer mass and to preach to my brothers. And most of the time, I'm preaching to the guys that they're the example of holiness to me.
Right.
And I'm trying to tell them how to be more holy.
How many priests are at your monastery?
I got to think about that. So we are 20 in total. And I want to say, like, just like shooting from the hip, I think that 12 are ordained out of the 20. And a lot of those are older guys at a time when we did tend to ordain more. But out of the more recent vocations, that balances the opposite. We have far fewer ordained than we do who are not.
Okay. So when did you, I think we got off track on the when did you know your call was to be a monk? How did you come about that call?
That was rough. So I remember feeling early on in life a call to serve God. And I wasn't Catholic then. So I wanted to be a pastor. And I remember like I was like 5 years old and I had this figured out that, so what's the biggest problem for most people in serving God? Well, their jobs. What if you could make your job serving God? I'll be a pastor. Then I don't have to worry about it. And I thought that was just the greatest idea. Later, I became Catholic and I thought about priesthood. And I felt pretty strongly for a very long time that God was calling me that away. Of course, I resisted like a lot do, trying to convince myself that, no, not me. This is just something else. This is a stirring to ministry, and I can serve you in many ways. You know, the bartering. Well, I won't be a priest, but I'll be a deacon. Let me get married, you know, like a minister, but with a pretty girl. That would be great. And I kind of had that idea in mind. When I finally went to college, I was discerning between becoming a diocesan priest and a Jesuit. Monks were not on the radar. I thought monks were a complete and total waste of life. So I was looking at active ministry. I wanted to be on the battlefields,
right,
on the front lines. So I went to the college, St. Gregory's, which is now closed, but it's where my monks are, as neutral territory. It was, you know, neither fish nor fowl, ne carne ne pesce. And I thought that would be neutral territory where I'd get a little philosophy under my belt and keep on that track for seminary, but discern in the presence, you know, of the other gender. So that was part of the plan too. Well, along the way, there were some wonderful moments of clarity and some terrible moments of stupidity. And I finally managed to banish that idea of ministry from my head for about a year. I had a girlfriend. Life was great. She was wonderful and would have gladly married this woman of God. And God's like, nope, not for you. This isn't where I want you. And it's hard to explain. It wasn't a feeling like an emotion. It was something deeper than that, which is what made it so disconcerting. Because the emotion was, I want to be with her.
Mm-hmm.
But the something deeper was saying, but I'm not supposed to be. And so the more I prayed, the clearer it became. And I kept saying, Lord, show me your will. But I was covering my eyes while I prayed it. you know, Lord, let me hear you as I cuff my ears. Let me see you as I cover my eyes. And I will do whatever you want me to do so long as it's what I want to do. I went to seminary. And the first year, I hated it. It was miserable. And all I thought about was the girl and the monastery, which was really weird,
mm-hmm,
because I thought monks were a waste of life again. It's a frat house for Jesus. Who wants to do that?
I don't know. It sounds kind of fun if you explain it like that.
But the second year of seminary, I loved it. And all I thought about was the monastery. The girl was no longer on the mind, at least not in that way. And when good days and bad days and whenever I would close my eyes and try to meditate, it kept coming back to the monastery, which was a pretty sure sign. When God is on your heart in the ups and the downs and the in-betweens, you know, we all think about something else on a bad day. Why didn't I do?
Right.
Or on a good day, oh, Lord, I would serve you forever from the mountaintop.
Right.
But when you get the same thing at a high and a low and in the middle that's stable, that's probably good discernment.
Mm-hmm.
I told my spiritual director, I said, hey, I think God might be calling me to the monastic life, even though I really don't want to go. And his response was, well, it's about time you figured it out.
Oh, wow.
What a jerk.
He could have saved you so much time, right?
Yeah, at least a couple of months. At least a couple of months.
Okay, well, why don't you give us a glimpse into your day at the monastery?
Oh, okay, so we wake up not too bad early. Wake up bells at 5. Then we go pray vigils. Lasts about an hour. And after vigils, we have a period where we can grab a little breakfast if we want or not. And that's also a time for private prayer and reading. Lectio Divina. Mm-hmm. Encountering the Word of God in a prayerful, meditative way is really key to us. For Dominicans, it's the rosary. For monks, it's the scriptures. And in particular, in this mode of lectio. So we get about an hour of that. Then we go back for another round of prayers, for Lauds, morning prayer. After that, another short period, and then Mass. So we have a kind of a preparation period for Mass. After Mass begins our first work period. And different guys do different jobs. We have folks who cook in the kitchen so that we have something to eat. I work with cows and bees. So I'm usually herding one critter or the other, be they small or large. That's my job. Around noon, we come in for prayers, have lunch, more prayers, and then go back to work. Second work period until around 5 o'clock when we come in for Vespers. And that begins kind of a longer period of, like, the morning is really tight, prayer in silence. The evening is really tight, prayer in community. So first Vespers, then a common meal, which we take in silence. There's table reading while we're there so that we can form our minds while we fill our bellies. Then we all wash the dishes. The monks do all the scrub and dub to get everything ready. And we go to recreation. We spend time together, at least a good 15, 20 minutes, just playing cards, talking, hanging out.
Okay, so you can talk sometimes.
We can. Yeah, this is our downtime, and it's in a room where, like a big living room, where we all kind of hang out. Mm-hmm. Some guys play dominoes, some play cards, some just read a magazine and talk. But it's just a time to share life together in a happy way. Then we go back for our final prayer, Compline. After that, it's private prayer for the rest of the night. So we can read, we can go before the tabernacle, pray a rosary. We're also allowed hobbies, you know, like within. So we have the amount of private prayer we have to do, St. Benedict says, at least 2 hours during the normal year of private prayer and reading. And then during Lent, we do 3 hours of that.
Okay.
But we are allowed hobbies. So somebody wants to collect stamps or whittle some wood, you know.
Right.
Either things that, or just go for a walk and
enjoy
something.
Do you have
something.
A hobby?
Not really. I'm one of the younger guys in the monastery, which means that there's a lot of labor to be done. And I wind up spending a lot of my time that's not prayer time, actually all my time that's not prayer time, focused on those activities. Because there's a lot that needs doing right now. So I try to keep it in its box, because it's really easy, and people who have lives know this. It is very easy to let all that work that needs to be done just ride roughshod over private prayer time.
Right.
So I safeguard and build a wall around that, but the rest of the time pretty much goes to work. So when I do get totally free time, like on a Sunday, when there's really no, like I'm supposed to be taking the day off, I just really like to sleep a lot and catch up before I go back into the plunge of another week of a lot. So
I don't think I asked you this. You are a Benedictine.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
Benedictine monk.
And that to me says very smart.
Not always.
Well, not I feel always. Like in your case it is, because I've heard you speak for 3 days now, 4 days now. No, three, because I'll be there tonight. So I feel like you're pretty smart.
Yeah, St. Benedict only says that the candidates need to seek God sincerely. They ain't got to be bright or pretty. And I'm telling you.
Okay, so I asked around the office if anybody had any questions, and one person said, can one be an oblate at your monastery? And I was like, I don't even know what that is, but I'm going to ask him, and then I'm going to ask him to explain what an oblate is. Is that even how you say it?
Not exactly, but oblate. So from the word oblation.
Okay.
Making an offering, making this commitment. And oblates are folks who are not monks, but wish to connect themselves in a certain way with monastic spirituality. And that always happens with a particular house, just like with monks. Monks are bound to their individual monasteries. Franciscans and Jesuits to their order, and they can move around. But we monks, it's that house. And so our oblates are likewise bound to a particular house in that monastic sensibility. And they try to live some of the contemplation, some of the silence, and large parts of the rule of St. Benedict apply to everybody. In fact, Pope Benedict, when he was doing his thing, when he was Pope, he recommended the rule of St. Benedict for families. Like, read this. It's all about how to make a holy community, and that's what families are supposed to be. And 95% of it can actually be lived in a family setting. It's pretty neat. So there's fruit to be had there, even in a life in the world, in the workaday world with spouse and family, to try to live humility, compassion, silence, dedication to the Word of God, to the extent one can. I mean, if you're working a job and you got a family, if you're doing the amount of prayer we're doing, you are failing at your vocation.
Right.
You know, what's good for us to do is actually harmful. If you're knocking out 4 hours in the church plus 3 hours of reading, you are neglecting something.
Yes. Okay. So basically, a family could be an oblate.
Yeah, the whole crew could be oblates.
Okay.
And we have some that are, usually husband-wife combos. We also have some diocesan clergy that are oblates. So even in their ministry as priests, they want to embrace more of that quiet contemplative nature, which we oftentimes think of like a Jesuit spirituality or a Franciscan spirituality. Well, there are some folks who, even though they are drawn to ministry, really need to recharge their batteries in silence.
Okay.
And I'm definitely one of those. So this kind of outbound ministry, which is not what we do, you feel the power go out of the robe and I got to go recharge.
Yes.
And just go back to my silence and kind of retreat back to that. And then some of the diocesan clergy, while they may seem very outgoing normally, they really need to recharge those batteries. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've got a few oblates out there hiding.
Does your house do retreats for people?
We do.
Okay.
Retreats is one of the major outreach thing that monks do. So because we don't typically go out, our primary focus is being home and trying to be holy. But we wind up creating a little sanctuary and refuge where we create an atmosphere conducive to prayer.
Okay.
Conducive to that encounter with God. And while others can't live in that realm, they can come for a visit.
Right.
And sort of put out into deep waters, recharge their batteries. Or I like to use the get equipped for war and go back. You know, rest, resupply, and back to battle.
Right, right.
And we're there to be God's gas station in the spiritual life.
That's a lovely analogy there. So at your monastery, you said you work with bees and cows. So here we're going to let you have a little commercial time here. So we talked about having a time where we come up there and see your bees and your cows and your mummy, because you have a mummy up there, you told us.
We do have a mummy. We have a wonderful museum.
So the ladies in the office, I think we're going to get together and come purchase some of the beef that comes from your cows. So I want you to explain to the people out in podcast land, as you did to us, because then they're going to want some. And it's going to help you, because we will go pick it up for you, because we do plan on going up there sometime in late May, early June. And so you tell us about these cows that you have and the bees and the honey and all the different things that you make.
So we have a number of products. The monks like to try to pay their own way.
Mm-hmm.
We really do try to live by the sweat of our brow. Now, we still depend on donations to make it, but we try to do as much as we can to sustain the house. And everybody who can gets a job. So the bees are a wonderful hobby, they started off as a hobby. And then they became a job.
Mm-hmm.
So we maintain around 400 to 600 hives, depending upon the time of the year. And we send them out for pollination to go make the almonds, make almonds, because they can't do that without the bees.
Mm-hmm.
And then we scatter them locally to make local wildflower honey. So the real stuff, like the real stuff, not corn syrup mess. But if you get honey from a local beekeeper, it's just better always, because it's real honey. And that's been one of our most popular things. People go gaga for the honey, and we sell out every year. It doesn't seem to matter how much we produce. It will go away.
And what's honey season? Like when's the best time to go get the honey so we don't run out?
We always have a fresh crop about mid-July to the beginning of August.
Okay.
Just depends on when we get it bottled. We pull it off in July, and maybe it takes me a month to actually get around to it because I got to babysit the cows too.
Mm-hmm.
So things go in cycles. But usually like August, September, October. Even November is safe. But when we get close to Christmas time, that's when the supply is usually run thin.
Okay.
And whatever we have left is no longer left.
I'm writing that down.
And then on the cattle side, the monks have cows. And we have some lovely Angus cross. People love the Angus, you know, with the marbling. It's all very popular right now. And we cross those with Limousine, which taste really good. And so they make a nice little balance. And we do the processing ourselves now. So I went to butcher school to learn how to butcher.
Oh, wow.
One of the other brothers already knew how. And we're going to be doing this. We do this ourselves. That's the monks do the processing. So it's our cows, kind of our butcher shop, if you will. And then we do sell retail cuts from our monks marketplace, which is a little storefront you can come and visit. And buy the honey, the beef, soap. We make soap. One of the brothers makes soap the old-fashioned way, which is what I use at home always. I take the ugly stuff, like when a batch doesn't go right.
Right.
We use the ugly soap. It works just as well. And we sell the pretty stuff. But the monks use that, and it's wonderful stuff. And then we also sell like the bulk beef. So people buy quarters and halves, which if anybody grew up on a farm, that's probably how they used to get their cattle. And that's when it gets cheaper. That's when, you know, really good beef gets to be the same price or cheaper than the grocery store. So if you can buy bulk, you can stock
up.
And that's the major way that we move our beef.
Okay. Well, that's very exciting, and I can't wait to come up there and see your place and get some beef and honey. Although you won't have any when we go, because we'll probably go, like I said, late May, early June. But that's okay. It'll make us have another trip up there.
We'll have to set something aside from the private stash.
Oh, there you go. Okay, so every time a guest comes onto our podcast, I like to ask these five questions. Are you ready?
Fire in the hole.
Okay. What is your favorite meal?
That is a very difficult one. I would say the official state meal of Oklahoma is about as perfect as you can get. Chicken fried steak, mashed potatoes, white country gravy, fried okra, slice of pecan pie.
Nice.
And sweet tea.
What about a roll?
That's in there too.
Okay.
But usually I'm so full from the chicken fry, I ain't got space for that.
What is your favorite hymn?
Favorite hymn? Let all mortal flesh keep silence, especially when it's done with the multiple part harmony and a good bass line in there.
Okay. And you have a lovely voice, by the way. I guess it's called intone. Is that right? This morning before the gospel reading.
Oh, yeah, the different chants and things.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. You have a lovely voice. What is your most memorable vacation?
Most memorable vacation? We didn't take many, so that reduces the field quite a bit.
Did you ever go on one of those spring break vacations when you were in college? Did you go to Disneyland?
Probably the best, which it wasn't a vacation for me, but it would be the most memorable overall. So for spring break, when we had our college, I took the college students on a trip to visit the California missions. So during the break, we did this death march via minivan from Oklahoma all the way out to California. And we hit national parks along the way for a little natural beauty with the missions. So we saw the Grand Canyon and Death Valley and the Muir Woods, along with all of these mission sites. It was very prayerful, but also just prayerful in the sense of the church and the mission, but also just God's natural beauty. And I got to see that soak in to the students in a way that was very moving. They absorbed some of that silence by just being in awe of nature more than anything. Yeah, you get a little taste of monk there. Good for you. Good for you, even though I was on a death march.
Well, it sounds lovely. If you weren't a monk, what would you have been?
Oh, if I weren't a monk, what would I have been?
Could I make a suggestion?
What's that?
A radio guy.
And I probably would have been just some bum. I don't know. My idea when I wasn't looking at religious life, when I was trying to conjure something else up, was going to be government service of some kind. So some kind of government service would have been.
You're going to be a servant no matter what, is what you're telling me. And what do you hope to hear when you get to heaven?
Well, you made it, didn't you? Glad you actually could scrape on in here by the grace of your Lord and Savior. That would be it. It'll be even making it, I think, will be a great accomplishment. I got a lot of work to do,
Don't we all?
People don't become monks because they're holy. They become monks to try to get there. And that's certainly how I feel. This ongoing conversion is something I got a lot of working on to go yet. So I think God will be pleasantly surprised.
Okay. All right. Well, I think you got a better chance than some of us. So. Thank you so much for joining me today on the Most Blessed podcast. And I hope that I will send you a link to this so you can listen to it. And I just really appreciate you being here this week. It's been a lovely week.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. If you have any comments, questions, or concerns, please send them to mbspodcast@mbs.church. blessed day.